Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and still love one another each day. Here's John and Laurie. Or is it Laurie and John? Oh, take it away, you crazy kids.
It's Laurie this week. I'll beat you to it.
Good morning, Hezzy. Good morning, listeners. As you heard my excitable husband, good morning, all. Gee, Johnny.
Yeah, tell him what I played for you this morning before the show came up.
Frank Sinatra singing The Way You Look Tonight.
Yeah. When we're old and great.
Beautiful.
I still love it. Yeah, I thought so too.
That was pretty
special.
She's
a very as you know, Hezzy, because you actually met and spent time with Laurie, but she's a very, very special woman. And
Johnny.
And absolutely.
And I don't mind telling our listening audience that I love her very much. It's been a great blessing on my life to be married to her for 10 years.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that's the thing, you know, and it does all, and always begs the question, you know, I'm now at a point in my life where I'm, you know, believing that there is an eternal life and that we'll be together forevermore, because I always wonder, not always, but sometimes I wonder, why it took so long for our paths to cross, because Johnny's...
Just weren't ready for me.
Yeah, I guess it was that. And on that happy note, this week we're talking about the 2022 GMC Yukon Denali four-wheel drive.
Oh,
I love you, Johnny.
I know you do.
Anyway, this week we are talking about the 2022 GMC Yukon Denali four-wheel drive.
Big.
Johnny calls it in the article he wrote for the Yonkers Tribune, the King of the Road, and as Roger Miller sang.
Yeah.
And there's no better description. It is an SUV, a full-size SUV wrapped in a truck.
Yeah.
And so before we go into this incredible vehicle, I think we should start with this. You know, when you right now, where the auto industry is so funky, and it's still so difficult to find exactly the vehicle you want like you could 5 years ago, with the microchip problem, with the pandemic, with all the massive changes in the world, and now with whatever's going to happen in Europe, because, of course, Ukraine and Russia are a big supplier of you know, oil. The question is,
crude oil.
When we start as drivers thinking, what do we need? Sometimes we get overexcited. Sometimes we even get excitable. And by this I mean we think, well, I've got to have this kind of car because this is going to be useful in the future, or this is what I'm going to need. But the problem is we sometimes don't really realize what's practical. And for that explanation, I'm going to cite my own husband's reaction to the Yukon Denali, which simply was, wow, this is a great car, but it's too big. So what I'm saying is this we're going to take this review from a different angle. We're going to take it specifically from who would, could, and should buy this car, because it's a marvelous car. But for some people, they may be biting off way too much more than they can chew. And for others, they may find that although it hits all the bells and whistles, maybe they do need a truck rather than a grand SUV. So that's where I want to start with the show. Johnny, do you agree?
I know better than to disagree.
Well, I know that, but I mean, or
that's
else.
That's a perfect answer. I love that one. That was the best.
I had to think about it for a minute, Hezzy. You got to couch these things just right.
Well, let me give you, you betcha. Let me give you an example. Johnny took the Yukon Denali to the grocery store, and he came back and he said, I'm not driving this car the rest of the week. Well, that did not prove true. He did. But the reason that he came back with that, you know, kind of frame of reference was quite simply because you can't park it in a grocery store parking lot without really either going to the very rear of the parking lot and realizing it's okay to take 2.5 spaces, or
1.5 actually.
Well, here's, I'll go into size in a minute. Or that if you do, it's going to be almost impossible to wedge that vehicle and get it to fit any standard parking space. Here's why, and Johnny just made the point. It's a very long vehicle. It's a truck. It is a truck. A truck wrapped in an SUV.
It's basically a crew cab truck that is completely
enclosed.
That's
the platform. That's the platform. So when you park it, you can go right up to the line in front of you where you can park, and you can definitely go within the width of a parking space, but you're going to be very, very challenged to get out of the car without hitting the vehicle parked on either side of you. But here's the problem. Your tail, the back of the car, is going to stick out a full third.
No, I didn't.
Yes, it is. It's about 25%. That's my final offer of the length
more
of
like,
car.
More like one or it's at least a foot or more.
Oh,
though.
It's more than that because.
You see it. If you walk into the parking lot and you've parked so that the front is up at the line at the front of the parking space, and you walk out into to go down to your car, you see your car sticking out.
Ladies, it's like trying to put on a dress that's two sizes too small. That's how I would equate this. How about that?
Yeah, I have to think about it, but, you know, that's...
Or, Johnny, it would be putting on a size 38-inch waist pair of pants.
Well, that's impossible, so that's not...
It doesn't... It simply doesn't...
Ho, 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 Santa can't wear those.
So in the review, Johnny made the point, and a very, very well-founded point, that this is not your let's run around town, go around.
No, this is a specialty truck. It really is. And you addressed that, I think, better than me in the review, that when you are looking at a truck this size, with all of these features that we need to talk about the truck, but when you're looking at a car, a vehicle, SUV, it's fully loaded like this, rides like a dream, it's got all these extra features, sunroof, I mean, anything you can think of. It's on there, towing packages, all of it. You have a purpose in mind. And one of the things that was said in the article that we wrote was, this is a vehicle you would see on Yellowstone, for all of those of you who have watched the TV series Yellowstone, which is a big ranch in Montana. Mm-hmm. This big ranch, big open country, lots of space to cover, lots of things that you need, trailers and horse trailers and hauling things and carrying important people in over long distances and not always paved roads. And this one, this particular one, and why this came into my mind now, I don't know exactly, but this one had the little TV sets. It had the upgraded infotainment center so that there were like 12-inch TVs on the back of the front seats for the people in the passenger seats could watch videos, could hook them up to their laptop. It's just all kinds of things. Like if you had lots of children and you lived in Wyoming, Montana, Texas, pick a place where you travel great distances, this is that kind of a vehicle. And it's not something, and Lori was talking earlier on, and you talk about, when you buy cars and how you think about cars. When you think about when we were young, you bought a sports car, most impractical vehicle you could probably ever own. But you know what? You loved it. Why? It just did what you wanted to do. You look good in a two-seater, and they're fun to drive and all those kinds of things. And so that's one of the big considerations of buying a vehicle. The time you get to buying the GMC Denali, you probably have made some big life decisions. You're probably involved in something, and I don't look at this necessarily as a work truck or a work SUV. It could be. And it also could be the one that you take your family from the ranch into town and you drive 50 miles. Gas mileage is not particularly good on this vehicle compared to a lot of vehicles. But, I mean, it's a big, heavy vehicle. We'll talk about that in a minute. But you still clean this truck up, put your family in it, and you go to Dallas. You go downtown Dallas to any of the great restaurants. And you pull up and valet parks it for you. I mean, you would not be bothered at all to show up in this vehicle in a very prestigious area and expect to be treated like somebody who you know, had a really, who was
well, now that, that's
in a Mercedes,
where,
a big Mercedes.
Well,
as opposed
now that's
to this.
Where that's where I kind of don't agree with you, and here's and here's why. This
SUV.
This grandiose SUV has all the cosmetics that you're kind of referring to, all the bells and whistles, all the beauty, all the leather seats and the gorgeous, you know, interior and all that stuff. No, that's just icing on the cake. There is so much integrally built into this vehicle that if you stripped away all of that stuff, you would find a workhorse, a real workhorse. This vehicle is designed not just to looking good is the last thing to me is the last thing that matters about this vehicle. There is so much technology in this car that's meant to ensure it can tow heavy loads, ensure that it's going to be safe, especially because of its size, on the road. And I by that I mean it is not easy to drive a large vehicle. You really have to be totally on target with what you're doing. It's you know, in traffic, it's going to be a complicated. Off-road, you've got to be very sure, and this is a four-wheel drive vehicle, of how you're manipulating, you know, uncharted roads or, you know, what I mean, rough territory. The fact is, everything about this vehicle is made to perform, and it's made to perform on a ranch. It's made to perform on a farm. It's made to perform in any off-road situation almost. But it's also made to do work. Now, it is not a city vehicle. It is, I mean, yeah, you could pull it up in front of the Metropolitan Museum of Art for the Met Gala, and everybody's going to go, ooh, ah, it's that beautiful. I mean, it really, truly is. But you're not going to, there's no way you could even park it in New York City.
Why do you think I said you pull up in front and the valet parks it for you? You turn the keys over.
But honey, if you live in the city, you're going to have two parking spaces in your underground garage. It's not going to work.
Not what I'm talking about. I said was you come from the ranch into downtown Dallas to go to one of the nice restaurants in Fort Worth or Dallas itself or whatever. And it's basically interstate up until you get off and go downtown, and you pull up in front of the restaurant, and then the valet parks the vehicle.
Or if you own a Texas ranch, you take your Mercedes if you're going to town. Let's face it.
I was thinking. I was thinking you need not only to get the Denali, but you need a second vehicle.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
For shopping.
So is this a suburban vehicle? Shopping. So is this a send your ranch hand? So is this a suburban vehicle? Yeah, no. I mean, it's a great vehicle if you've got five kids, no more. The neat thing about this three-row vehicle is the third row is really roomy. I mean, you can actually put a teenager back there without them complaining. In fact,
it's a big vehicle.
Got
room.
So you can fit five kids in the second, third rows. And you can fit your husband and wife in the front seats, driver and shotgun passenger. It's a really tremendous family vehicle from that standpoint. So, yeah, it's tremendous. Plus, there's amazing ample room behind the third seat for storage. I mean, this is it's a truck wrapped in an SUV. So yes, all of that and more. This is not your, you know, toot around town vehicle. It's just not.
It really is a specialized type of vehicle.
But what I was trying to forewarn our listeners to at the front end of this broadcast is this. We get enthusiastic about it's the milk and bread syndrome when there's a forecast for a snowstorm. Everybody runs out and piles, you know, up three grocery carts full of food that they won't need because the storm's going to, you know, breeze in and out in 24 hours. We are in stressful days. We are living in a stressful time. You cannot read the newspaper without 99.9% of it being tragic, even to the extent that poor supermodel Linda Evangelista has suffered incredibly from what should have been a simple beauty routine, and she's now maimed for life. Nothing seems to be going real good right now on the planet. So we're in an uptight frame of mind. So don't go and buy this vehicle thinking, God, I've got to have a big car in the event. No, that's the wrong reason. The right reason to buy this vehicle is you have a need for a vehicle that's going to take you where you need to go, that's going to, like a sporting dog needs land to run, this vehicle needs space to operate. It's not a city car. It's maybe, depending on the size of your family, a suburban car, but it is a country car. This is a workhorse. And this is my point. The hauling capacity of this vehicle, all of the safety features, the dynamics of the suspension, which are incredible. This is an amazingly well-handling, quiet car.
Yeah, that's true.
And although it only gets 14 miles a gallon city, it gets 19 miles a gallon highway, which for something like this is great. It really is great. And so the point
big
I want to make...
It's got a big V8.
Huge V8. I mean, there's no 10
speed transmission.
Exactly. That's the whole point. It's built to work.
Right.
So if you need a vehicle that works for you, yeah, sure. It's gorgeous to look at. It's got metallic coated color. Its upholstery inside is absolutely luxurious. But you deserve that. If you've worked that hard that you can afford a $12,000 or $11,400 trim package, then all power to you. Because at the end of the day, it is a pricey car, fully loaded at, what, $85,000,
yeah,
Johnny?
Yeah, right at $85,000.
But it's going to last
you. And it starts at $72,000. I mean, it's not cheap anyway.
No, it's not cheap, but then it's in the ballpark of any truck of that size or any SUV of that size. But
especially a luxury one, which is what this is. It's truly a luxury SUV. Even without all the $11,000 package you were talking about, it's still a luxury SUV.
And like any car, especially a vehicle like this, you stick it in the barn, the garage, wherever you garage your cars. You make sure you're, you know, current on all of the oil changes and the upkeep. You keep it roadworthy, and it's going to last you a lifetime. I mean,
that's true.
This is not a car. There are a whole bunch of vehicles that we drive that we say, well, I wonder what they're going to come out with in 2 years when they change the model completely. A point of fact, we just got the new Jeep Grand Cherokee. Now, I owned years ago a Grand Cherokee, and this is nothing like what I owned, nothing like. And models, based on their popularity and sales records, will go through changes every couple of years or three. They'll have a new body design. They'll have a new interior design. They'll have a new motor design or whatever. This particular vehicle, this GMC Yukon Denali, this is a classic. There's nothing I can foresee, short of it flying in the air, that it doesn't have that you won't need for the rest of your life. It's that well thought out.
You know, you've said this several times. We talk about GMC, and we sort of pass over it. Do you realize that General Motors, GM, has been around 113 years?
Mm-hmm.
They've survived all the depressions, all the everything, and they're still in business, and their stocks are still trading at about $50 a share. I just, you know... And this is a little story, it's kind of off the topic, but I was thinking about the Hyundais because we do like Hyundais. And I remember, and what I was thinking about was my vehicle's 10 years old and so forth, still runs great. Mine is a Ford. But I was thinking about the Hyundai, the first Hyundai we got 10, 11 years ago when Lori and I were first married, and there was something wrong with it. The guy who brought it to us had a broken part, and he said, this broke. He said, it won't affect the riding, you know, you're driving the car and everything, but this part is broken, and we have to report it and all those kinds. And I still remember that. And I thought, my gosh, you're sending me a vehicle and it's got a broken part. That was 10 years ago. Today, when you get a Hyundai, which has the, you know, greatest and longest warranties and all those kinds of things, nothing goes wrong. And as Bugsy Lawler said, they don't build bad cars anymore. But look at General Motors, who's been building cars and trucks primarily for 113 years. don't you think that they have the knowledge and experience and background to produce a quality product? It isn't like they just started yesterday. And so what we're seeing is a continuum of the GMC corporate idea of making the best truck, and in this case SUV, on the market. I believe that. What do you think, honey?
Well, you know, we talk about some of the Far Eastern companies that have been around, wow, since World War II or after World War II. And here you've got GMC that's been around since the beginning of car manufacturing. So the Japanese and the South Koreans, obviously, they look to GMC and Ford as the model for upon which they build the foundation of their own companies.
To appeal to Americans.
To appeal to Americans and increasingly to people in the Far East, in the Middle East, in Europe. Because although we have long held that Europe and the East have smaller cars because they've got smaller roads, because they've got, you know, different transit systems, that's changed. You can now go to Europe and see big cars. It's not all little, you know, deux chevaux. So, and from that standpoint, it's not necessity. It's social status, to be quite honest. The bigger the car, the more successful you are.
Yeah, it's to reflect the changes in income and lifestyle. Sure.
So this is what we see. When we see, I don't know if the Yukon Denali is being exported. Probably is, but are we going to see a lot of them? You know, in driving the roads of Japan. I don't know, but the fact of the matter is, we're not going to see an awful lot of them driving the roads of the United States either. Because this is such a specialty vehicle, and it comes at a high price.
But it's also, we have a much bigger country.
But wait, let me finish. It comes at a big price tag, but I tell you, I could account for every cent behind that price tag.
Yeah, I agree. Well, tell them some. Talk about that specialty package. I don't have the stuff in front of me, but I just the basic. I will tell you that the basic package covers pretty much everything you would want from a safety standpoint, from a handling standpoint, this ride, the magnetic ride. Of course, it's a big vehicle, which tends to ride better because you've got a bigger wheelbase.
Let me go through it then. You know, as Johnny just said.
And you got to tell them the first thing off. It's got running boards, it's got the running boards that come out when you open the door and go back in when you close the door to keep them out of the way. And you need them on a vehicle this size. Very handy, very, very well done on this vehicle.
And you do, because otherwise you need a pole vault. I mean, this it's a truck. It is a truck wrapped in an SUV, in a large SUV. Okay, so it's got, you know, pretty much. Well, I'll go over all the standard equipment later, but for the options, and these options are going to,
they all fall under one major package, and then it's divided into different packages. Yeah.
Right, so the MSRP at $72,500, the fully loaded at $85,900, gives you a package cost of about $12,000 in options, less the, you know, plus the destination charge. So, okay, here we go. These are the options.
They did include formats.
Big news.
I'm in now.
Floor mats. Now we got your attention, Hezzy. Floor mats, and Hezzy's all over it. Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
So here's the options. And, you know, figure out if you need it or not. Sunroof. Johnny does not need a sunroof. He's got a...
Hey,
all right,
ease up on my balding head.
Okay. And a dual-pane panoramic, sunroof. Okay, it's a big sunroof. It goes from the front to the back. Do you need a sunroof? Well, it's, you know, sunshine's great. What the heck? 22-inch bright machined aluminum wheels. Do you need them? You don't need them. a rear seat media system. That's the 12.5-inch color touch LCD screen, high definition, so that you can keep your kids quiet as you drive across the country.
Hold on. I don't want to skip over that 22-inch wheels and say, well, you don't need them. It depends. 22-inch wheels are bigger.
If you're taking it off-road,
yeah. Yeah, if they're bigger, and because they're bigger...
They're going to pull better.
And they give you a little better
traction,
ride.
Right.
And ride. Mm-hmm. So depending again on what you intend to do with the vehicle will determine some of these things that are listed as options. Go.
Okay. So mm-hmm. next, you've got the premium capability package, which has now this is okay. This is what we discussed in the article. But let me say before I go to the next series of options, you're going to need your options, and here's why: those retractable assist steps, those running boards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you need that.
You need them. So okay, now look, folks, if you can afford $72,500 for this vehicle, yeah, you can afford a tad under $12,000 for all these very important options, but here's where they're important.
I agree.
Forget the sunroof. The running boards are absolutely a necessity. But here's where it is a necessity. The premium capability package with active response four-wheel drive has an electronic limited slip differential, air ride adaptive suspension.
Now you're talking off-road stuff, different roads, roads that are not paved. And, yes, you want that kind of thing.
And the car is going to tell you when it needs to go into four-wheel drive, depending on the road conditions. But here's the next. Now you're going to trailer. Now you're going to tow, okay? In that tow package, it has an enhanced cooling radiator. You need that.
Big one, yeah.
Because when you're pulling something heavy, your engine's working harder.
Yeah.
It needs to be cooled. Now, next. The trailer side blind zone alert, absolute necessity. You don't know what's coming up from behind you.
From a safety standpoint, all of these things, and well thought of, you know, GMC, good thinking.
But you know, your vehicle does. The trailer brake controller, absolute necessity. Adaptive cruise control has become a necessity in any car that we drive because what it means is the car's going to react faster than you in the event you got a brake.
Go to the one of the things that I want to make sure that you point out is the capacity to see all around the vehicle. There's a special thing on there about the trailer where about seeing the trailer, around the trailer. You can actually even see behind the trailer. Though that kind of technology has made a big difference. They even now have the technology that helps you back it into a place.
Well, it's got a rear camera mirror, which is going to show you what's going on back there when you're towing. It's got an emergency braking system when you're towing.
Yep.
Invaluable. And it's got a rear camera mirror washer. Well, you know what? You can laugh about that, but don't. Because if you're off-road and you're slinging mud all over the place, you need it. You're not going to stop and clear off your mirrors. So all of these things are so well thought.
Yeah. The engineers in this really did do a good job of thinking about what is it that someone who uses this vehicle needs.
Now, let's talk about the government five-star safety ratings, okay? The overall score is 4, but here's why. Driver frontal crash, all 5 stars. Front passenger, 4 stars. I don't know why that's so. I mean, the car is built like a tank. Side crash, 5 stars for both front seat and rear seat. But the government gave it 3 stars for rollover, and I don't understand that. It is a tall car, but I don't think it's proportionately too tall for the width of the wheelbase.
Right.
So I don't know how that works. I just don't. But again, you know, this is a friggin' tank. If you're in an accident, believe me, you've got a much better chance of walking out of it than most other vehicles. This said, I cannot underestimate as an ambulance comes in the background. My God, sorry, folks. I can't underestimate the OnStar service that GMC provides for all of their. Vehicles. It's so invaluable. And Johnny wrote in his article a very interesting series of facts, and that is, and you have to go to YonkersTribune.com, folks, to read it, but the majority of accidents occur within the first 3 minutes of leaving home, within 1 mile of leaving home. You know, and so the fact is, an accident, no matter where you are, requires urgency. You get an OnStar notification. You call for help. It's going to possibly spare you, possibly even your life. So this OnStar program that GMC, that's unique to GMC, is so invaluable, especially for a vehicle like this, which you're going to take.
You've run out of
back
time.
And beyond. I haven't either, have I?
It's 10:30. You need to wrap up.
And so, folks,
we didn't get done by any stretch.
So, folks, if you have a need for the 2022 Yukon four-wheel drive Denali,
look at the article, because, too, it refers to the website where you can find out a lot of it.
This is the vehicle for you, and next week we'll talk about the new Jeep Grand Cherokee. Hezzy, have a great week.
You too.
That's
all
what happens
best,
when I let my wife
what
take over, Hezzy.
Oh, well, it's okay.
Anyway, be safe and
don't
get wind blown with the windstorm coming up.
Exactly. Don't get wind blown in this crazy weather. All the best.
Take care, buddy.
Take care, folks. Have a great week.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, well, there we have it. Whoops. I think I just disconnected our guy by accident. That's my fault. So let me just see if I can find his number. Bear with me a moment. We'll just have to wait. We'll have to wait a moment because I disconnected Brian, and let me just see if I can find his number. Bear with me a moment. There he is. That's him calling. Good morning.
Hi, how you doing,
Hezzy? Brian?
Yes,
my
it is. How you doing, my friend?
I accidentally hung up on you because I think you were on the line for about 5 minutes or so.
Yes, I was listening to the program there. You're all in for the formats, huh?
Yeah, formats, I'm in, you know. Yeah. You know, the Hyundai and the Kia, they charge you $125 for the format. And
yes,
I don't get it.
No, even now it's a calculus problem in buying a vehicle, you know, and then trying to operate a new vehicle is even a larger problem. So much, it's what they call them now, platforms. You know, they got everything on them now.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But the nice thing about Lori and John is they explain the rationale for some of these extras. You know, they get a 22-inch wheel, and you need that for this reason and for that reason. These people know what they're talking about, which is really fantastic.
And they have a very good chemistry, too.
Know what they're talking. Yeah, that's the best part.
Yeah, and actually, you have a good chemistry with them, too. They're joking around, and you're chiming in, too. So it's a nice little segment you do each week.
Well, it's fun. Well, I'm so glad to be able to speak to you, because I think we may not be married, but we have a good relationship as well.
There
so,
you go.
What do you think is going on? I guess what do you find most compelling? Because I know one thing today, in the afternoon at 4 o'clock, it's going to be a demonstration in front of One Larkin Plaza, and they're going to be talking about I don't remember what they're talking. Oh yeah, they're going to be a demonstration where parents and I guess grandparents as well, and probably some kids too. They're going to be demonstrating because they don't want to wear masks anymore in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard a video from Nader Sayers, the New York State Assembly member. He's also asking Governor Hochul to get rid of that requirement. And so some people agree with it, and other people don't. But I'm not sure which way to go. I know that personally, I'm going to continue to wear my mask.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what other people do. And it's difficult to understand what the right thing to do is nowadays, but I don't want to die right now. I think I got a couple of things I need to do. So I don't want to get infected.
Well,
I've got all kinds of other issues.
I would say, first of all, I guess that people want to be heard and they want their opinions made, but as strong a critic as I've been of the schools, it's really not in their hands. it's in the governor's hands, and I guess it's
exactly.
She's going to decide when they come back from the winter vacation.
Right.
Usually, I'm a little harsh also on these people who are anti-mask or anti-this, the vaccination type of thing. But the science is starting to be a little in their favor. But I, like you, I'm going to continue to wear my mask. Even it's been lifted for most indoor places now here in Yonkers. I still wear my mask when I go out. And but, you know, from my viewpoint is you don't want to rush into these things too fast because it can come back. We've seen it over and over come back like there's no tomorrow. And you're talking 27,000 persons that can get infected with teachers. And, you know, kids go here, there, and everywhere. And everybody wants to hug a kid, you know, when you hug grandma. You know what I'm saying? And that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I'm not – usually it's more the parents that seem to be upset than the kids. I really don't see kids having temper tantrums over the mask. They wear them quite well. You know, my wife goes to religious services, and you see you see the kids walking in with the mask on, and then you see parents digging in their pockets trying to put one on. You know, it's more the parents upset than the children. But
I agree with you on that. I don't understand why it's necessary for the kids not to wear the masks. But one thing that I find really annoying about the whole process is that we're not getting a straight answer, or there's an equivocation by the CDC, a different Dr. Amler, who's supposed to be in Westchester County. I don't find her direct or clear about the direction that they want to take, and they seem to change their direction every few weeks, so you don't know which way is which. And it's very hard to compel. I think the thing that I found most interesting is recently they were talking about masks. And there was one video I saw of a guy who used a vaping device. So like he would suck up some vapor. It wasn't like smoke, but it would create a sense of a smoke type thing. And then so he would suck it into his lungs, and then he would push it out, and he could blow it out through the mask, and it would leak from the top and from the sides and from the bottom, and I think the problem was, remember, you could get like these was it KN95 type masks, and they supposedly were better than some of the very flimsy type of one layer of cloth, which seems like cotton, which did absolutely nothing, but it just covered your face. And I remember when I was once in Ankara, this was years ago, when they used coal to heat and to do everything, and there was smog, and the smog was from the coal, and there were particles, and you would be literally breathing that stuff in, and it wouldn't come out of your lungs once you breathed it in. So people were wearing masks. But, you know,
I used to live in Los Angeles years ago, and this is many years ago, like in the, I guess it would be like late 70s, early 80s, and you would get the same thing because Los Angeles is in a basin, a little bit of a valley, and the smog would get there. It wasn't... you know, it was irritating, but we didn't wear masks. You could put a scarf around your face, but it was it's a very hot climate, so it wasn't exact. Then it wasn't comfortable, but there were days that it would get so thick it was ridiculous. But people kind of got used to it.
It wasn't healthy. But what I found really, really disturbing is that the government here in the United States, and probably in other places as well, but I don't really listen to what's going on in other countries because I live here. So the thing is, it seems that we never told people that there were certain masks that were really of no value. It may have looked good, but it really wasn't. And I think people got infected using some of those flimsy masks. And sometimes they told you could just wear a scarf around your face, and that wasn't good enough either. So I think we failed on that side of it. And then supposedly the kids are not so much getting infected, which is unusual. Usually, if you're an adult, you get a lot of antibodies. When you're the children, you don't have that. When it came to all these permutations of like Omicron and stuff like that, or the COVID-19 variant, the problem was that it didn't affect the kids so much, but they were carriers of it.
Yes.
So, in other words, they didn't even realize that they had anything going on with them, but they could infect grandma and grandpa and mom and dad, and they didn't know it.
You know, this.
And we didn't test them. That's the thing that's weird. We never tested the kids, and
yes.
I never understood why.
Well, I think they started kind of some testing in the schools, but to try to get to catch it and keep it down.
Notice of it that they did. I didn't get it.
Yeah, there was a.
Because
was
they
pretty,
talked about.
They
it.
Had some pretty extensive testing inside the schools, but the, what I was
really?
Would say yes, I would say this though the. It was a moving target. You know, it came on us real fast, you're trying to figure out what it's doing, and nobody really knew exactly, you know, would it be gone in the summer and only be here during the winter? Would it be one big blast, or would it keep coming back at us with all these mutations? But overall, because we put some of these things, even if they weren't exactly the best things or the right exact same things at the time, you know, as these variants have came out, they've been less and less deadly. They've been less and less stringent, and they're less likely to throw us into a shutdown. So
We don't know that. We don't know
yeah.
that. That's the problem. We presumed that from the very beginning.
Yeah.
But it
so
was
I'm
more
hoping,
contagious, but you said not as debilitating as the previous COVID-19.
Oh, you don't know what the long-term effects are. You know, some people who...
Exactly.
I've actually met people who have been infected twice. You know, I've told my wife we're so lucky we haven't
yeah.
gotten this. There's so many neighbors and friends and people she goes to religious services with. People don't really
yeah.
broadcast it a lot that I got the infection. You know, some people will tell you privately, but they don't really tell
yeah.
you. But just in our kind of like this close knit here, this. I don't know anyone personally that have died. I've known people who had relatives that have died, you know, from it, but no one that I met. But I know an awful lot of people who got infected and reinfected. And so you hope that long-term that this won't cause. I've heard maybe some heart problems or some other issues might come up from this upper respiratory
yeah.
infection, but I don't know of anything that's permanent right now.
I went to the synagogue on Saturday, and the synagogue, like the pews, usually could have held an easy, on one side of the synagogue, you could have easily had maybe 8 people on one side, and then there was the aisle that separated from the other side, so there were another 8 people there, and it goes back from front to back, I don't know, maybe about 50 type of aisles like that. But now it's separated where only 2 people can sit in any of these aisles. And I wore my mask, but then there are other people who don't wear the mask in the synagogue,
yeah.
but they're distanced from one another.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so hard to tell and what's right and what isn't. And then a lot of people are going to pray at their house of worship through the TV. And
yeah.
I can appreciate that.
Yeah, that's I would prefer that way actually, but my wife is big on attending services, so we go to services, and where
right,
she goes to
too.
Service, they had a little click of about maybe I don't know at one point like I'd say at least about 10% of the people who just refused to follow the rule that you had to have mask on indoors, but as Omicron rolled out, November, December kind of thing, and even now,
right?
The usage went up. The people, you know, it started being like maybe 10-12% that wouldn't do it. Then it's like about 5. Now you might find
yeah.
one person or 2 people in there that aren't putting on the mask. But it kind of shook people up the Omicron a little bit. How fast it spread, I think, just the number of people getting infected.
Right.
And I did see they had a service at where she goes to for the police and firemen that had who had passed away, you know, recently from the from the Omicron. And there was a significant number. They filled up multiple roles. There was family members too, but a third of this place of worship filled up, you know, of just people that had been lost, especially on the police department side. So maybe if they had told people this person had passed away, maybe people would have got a little more afraid and a little more compliant quicker, and we might have stomped this down a little faster. But
I would agree with you.
You had to be very prominent to be for people to say that you got it or you passed away from it, you know.
Well, the problem is that there were many people on the Yonkers Police Department who were infected.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know how many passed away, and we were never even told how many were infected, but it was a major infection. And quite often, the cops were in their cars, two cops, and they would not even move the car. It just parked somewhere and did nothing all day long. This way they got paid, but they were also sick.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It was a lot of retirees, you know, too, that they had in this service that they were older police officers that also,
I didn't know that.
Precautions, and it hit the police department pretty hard. You see a lot of, I guess there were a lot of retirements already. It's an older force, so there's a lot of retirements. Plus you had the issues with the virus, but you see it almost every month or now, so there's all these promotion ceremonies, you know, that I've lost track of how many promotion ceremonies there have been in the last year or two, where they just have to fill supervisory positions, you know. There was just one, I think yesterday there was a promotion ceremony.
Yeah, there was.
Officers, so.
Well, I don't know, is it because so many people are retiring?
I think that's part of it. You know, usually you only have to be there 20 years, and then you can get your retirement. You can go for a second job, you know, type of thing. And then there are a lot of older members in the force. And then you also have people who've gotten sick or gotten injured, you know, or hurt.
Yeah.
But there has been quite a turnover in the police department because, like I said, it's about every, I want to say not monthly, but every 5 or 6 weeks there's a promotion ceremony of, 8, 9, 10, 12, whatever, officers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess every department, you know, they need personnel.
Mm-hmm.
So we certainly have a need for police.
Yes.
You know, we're just north of the New York City border, and a lot of stuff that starts there comes up here into Westchester County.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've got a lot of people like that running who knows what they're doing in their cars on the highways in Westchester County, but they come from New York. Crazy.
Yeah. You're more susceptible to this virus being in a dense and built-up area like we are and like this city is.
Mm-hmm.
So many people fled the city at first, you know, to go, you know, all of a sudden North Salem looked real nice, or Katona kind of thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Did you get notes I sent you there, Hezzy, or no?
No, I didn't. So maybe you could just broach them. I don't know, for some reason maybe it didn't arrive. I kept on looking this morning again.
Wait a minute.
It did come in. You know what? It came in at 10:09 for some crazy reason.
Oh, I know.
Reason.
I've been suffering
sometimes with internet connections that are not so good. So you did mention that Councilman Rubo and the city clerk, Vinny Spano, they're going to attend the protest today at 4 o'clock.
That's what I've heard. It's kind of been organized by, I believe, Mr. Rubo. I'm not entirely sure, but I know they're strong proponents of it's time for these the children to take off their masks. That I think they feel it gets in the way of educating the children too. It's just we didn't have to go to school that way. Well, maybe you were in Israel. Maybe you had to have a gas mask handy when you were in
when you were in
Israel. But yeah,
that was a different mask.
Yeah, I know. What, they keep them in a closet, or how did that work actually?
Well, you know, we didn't have masks, if you must know. There was no need for a mask, but, you know, if you got shelled or whatever, you know.
Just rented a shelter kind of thing, I guess?
Yeah, exactly. It was all in shelters, underground shelters.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a roadway underground.
Mm-hmm.
At least, you know, so nobody even knew where anything was. But that's how it was done then. And now for the coronavirus, everyone's wearing masks.
Yeah. I didn't like it at first. It was difficult for me at first, like the first week or so, to get used to it. But especially after the cold weather came, I kind of started liking it. You know, I was never a scarf kind of person, but especially this year it was so cold. They were the greatest things to slice cheese a little bit, you know, just it kept my nose from getting frostbite.
You would breathe into the mask.
Mm-hmm.
You breathe in, but then when you exhaled, it would create a sense of heat because it was captured by the mask, so it felt warmer. So it really warmed you up.
Yes.
It was really cool, very, very cool. So it does look like the governor is going to extend the mask mandate in schools, but after the winter break, I think she's going to reevaluate, as you pointed out in your email. And I think that's where everyone is heading, aren't they?
Yeah,
they blipped it for
it's optional in indoor spaces except for, you know, like public transit and some other things. And it is popular to end it in the schools, and the numbers are going down, but you know, in the middle of a pandemic, I'm not one to rush and lift at things so quickly. I'd rather do them very slowly.
Exactly.
But it is what it is.
Well, you know, if they allow you not to wear it, then you could not wear it. But I remember years ago, every now and then I would go to a library because I'm very close to a library where I live. And so it was sometimes nice just to be able to work in a quiet place, you know, and no intrusion from telephone calls, or I would take phone calls. So you could really focus. It was a great place to escape. But what was interesting, there was one guy that was always there whenever I showed up. He was of Oriental descent. I think he was of Chinese descent, but it doesn't really matter. He wore a mask.
Yes.
And he was the only, and he wore it every day.
Yeah.
It was. I never saw him off without it because he lived in the same neighborhood that I lived in. So I would see him every now and then, say hello. It's not like we knew each other, but because I was familiar with him, and he recognized me as well. So I always said hello. And then it dawned on me, you know, this was something that he was used to, and it also does protect you, even though that was a flimsy mask at the time. Just, you know, those like light blue, pale light blue things. So it protected you from the smog, which is sometimes really very helpful. And I don't feel that in the heat, the mask doesn't bother me at all. I don't know why.
And it might have been a carryover for some of these bird flu. They had epidemics. They didn't have pandemics, but you know, in Southeast Asia and Vietnam and in southern China, that were very similar to this.
They had it in the Middle East just a few months ago.
The Middle
ago.
East
one, it was in Israel too for bird avian flu. And
I was going to say some people may after, you know, even after this pandemic. I saw a lady on a bus the other day, about 2 weeks ago. She had on a mask and she had on rubber gloves. And she even went so far as to have a like a tissue or a paper towel that she held in her rubber gloves to hold you know, like if she's pushing the button on the bus and what have you, that kind of thing. So it could, I guess, create a sense of I don't want to say germaphobe, but it could create a, some people just might start saying, you know what, just in general, I'm trying to avoid some of these. So maybe after he's, like you said, either lived through smog or lived through the bird flu, or even maybe he just has some kind of respiratory issue. But or like
never
maybe
know.
Trying to keep falling out. I'm not sure what, but I'm sure there'll be some people after this pandemic that are kind of like how Donald Trump was. Donald Trump wouldn't shake hands with people before the pandemic, so there'll still be fist bumpers maybe, you know, after the after the pandemic passes, I guess.
Well, one thing that you also brought up your email, you brought up the fact that it's been 2 years since we last had an Irish Day parade in the city for 2 years because of the pandemic, but it's going to happen on March 1st. Where they're going to be raising the Irish flag. But then on March 19th is when they're going to have a pre-parade mass at St. Barnabas High School Chapel. I like that place. It's really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been there to St. Barnabas?
No, I've heard of it. I've heard of the father
go.
There. Yeah,
but
I have never been in there.
Yeah, you got to go. It's really very, very nice. I think you'll enjoy it. So that is encouraging. So maybe we are getting to some sort of a norm.
And the honorees, the poor honorees have had to wait 2 years to be honored. Every year they were going to be honored since 2020, and now 2021.
Uh-huh.
This year. So hopefully there's no bad news between now and the middle of December, the next month, you know, some new variant.
Let's hope not.
Yes. They've really had to wait and wait and wait for their turn to be parade marshals and what have you.
I got to ask you. You also pointed out about a new business that's coming out to Yonkers. We're talking about Chick-fil-A. Did you ever have a Chick-fil-A? I mean, I hear a lot
once.
Of stuff written about it.
Did my
you?
Wife,
how
is
it?
I wasn't that impressed, but the people with with my wife that we were traveling with, and she went to a very conservative Protestant church at that time. They just thought it was the greatest thing since sliced cheese, you know. But I I wasn't that impressed. It was okay, but the to them is almost like a statement eating at this what do you call it, Chick-fil-A this is because the person that owns it's a very religious and conservative billionaire, I think. And he closes the store on Sundays, and it supports a lot of national prayer breakfasts and all these kind of events like that. He's very big on those kind of issues. So, but it was okay sandwich, but it wasn't nothing to write home about. The people that live in that area, I feel a little sorry for them because these operations, they really produce a lot of traffic. And in Westchester, there'll be a lot of people, A, that'll want to try it because they heard about it, or B, like my wife's the church she used to go to would just be feel like they're obligated to go get one of these things, you know, or something, you know, or that kind of thing. But I think it'll be very successful at that location. And
yeah, I would think so. On Central Avenue, that's got to be really big. And it's a big, big place. You know, they're going to have an indoor dining room and a kitchen, 3,813 square feet.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And they'll fill
huge.
It up, too. They'll have I think it has outdoor dining, too, and you can walk up and just order at a window. You don't have to stay.
Wow.
And you get two drive-thrus, so it's going to be a chicken factory, I'll tell you. And then the other ones are pretty big like this. They put them in rest stops a lot. That's when I was at a rest stop. We drove down to them.
Uh-huh.
They actually, the people in my wife's church actually drove down to Jersey to a rest stop.
Okay.
To buy these darn sandwiches and eat them and then come back.
That's amazing.
We weren't even traveling someplace, you know. It wasn't like we were going to Pennsylvania and we happened to stop there. But they actually went to the stop. And since my wife was going, I was obligated to go.
Chick-fil-A is a destination.
Yeah.
It's going to be a destination.
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
That's how they view it. I'm telling you, it's.
It doesn't sound like a Kentucky Fried Chicken.
No, I don't know, it's a Kentucky Fried Chicken. It's not like a steamed kind of chicken like that or something. And it is fast food, but it's okay. What can you do with chicken too much? You know, you can spice it up or this or that.
No idea.
Yeah,
you
know, put it on a bun.
It's
all about the preparation, but. They thought it was great, but you know, some people might argue that I have a limited palate anyway, so maybe they're tasting something in there that I'm not tasting. But it was okay.
Well, we'll leave it be at that, you know. And then once we open up, you never know, you could become a convert when it opens.
Yeah, maybe. And maybe I'll be over my rock road every day.
Do we know when it's going to be opening, or we don't know that yet?
I think it's in the planning stages right now. The person that told me about sent me like a rendering, and I assume there may be like, I don't know if there'll be an environmental review for a restaurant, but and it was a commercial place already, but you know, there may be some, and there's not many other tenants in that section there either. So I think they want to level the building. So I guess there'll be some planning and zoning stuff involved with that. They want to level the building and build this chicken palace.
Okay, sounds good. Well, you brought up some other points. Ada Medina, she was a Democrat, and she was designated a Yonkers City Court judge by the mayor, because there was an opening. Judge Quinones had moved up to the Supreme Court, so there was an opening on the city court, and Mayor Spano endorsed her and appointed her. And but it turns out that even though she's now a sitting judge, I guess she'll be running as an incumbent. But she has to start collecting signatures in March 1st.
Yeah.
It's like right around the corner.
Yeah,
she's barely been able to get sit down. She's not even comfortable in her seat yet.
Yeah, that's
so,
right. You know, she's hearing cases, and then she's going before the Democratic City Committee like a month or so later. Now she's, guess what? You're in a primary, dear. So, judge, I should
unbelievable.
Say. Yes. So,
does it look like does she have any challengers? There was one gentleman I thought was going to be a challenge to her, but then he talked a good game, and then he dropped out after 2 weeks.
That's what they say.
I don't know where
all
this stuff comes from.
They were. I guess she actually supervised him one time when she was supervising
him.
And then the there could be somebody that. Comes out of the woodwork during the month of March as they collect signatures, but I haven't heard of anybody, you know.
Neither
so,
have I.
But that's the telling time, you know. All of a sudden, you know, they'll hear about it like during the first week of March. Oh, so-and-so is at this building or that building collecting signatures. But because I think I could be wrong. I think you, in the city court, I don't think you have to be a lawyer. But at the higher courts, you do.
No,
I
don't think
wrong.
You do.
Yeah, so anybody
you
can basically
to
become
be.
A judge. You know, but,
But Judge Medina, she graduated from Northeastern University of Law back in 2002.
Yeah.
So she's a lawyer.
Yes.
I met her
briefly. She's very personable.
Oh, really? Have you?
Yeah, she's very personable.
I didn't know
and. That. I wouldn't mind appearing before her, to be honest. She seems to be, how can I say? She doesn't seem to be a person that would be, you know, flustered, you know, with a big caseload or something. Or she seems to be willing to listen. Let me put it that way. And maybe it comes from working in legal aid, you know, having to hear what the defendant situation was, and then trying to make your best case to the judge. But as I spoke to her, she's very. I don't want to use a word. The first word that popped in my mind was bubbly, but I seem to be getting these for a judge. I'm trying to look for a more a better term, but I guess she's just very personable and very likable, and it seems like she would listen. Is my point, and that's very important to me as a judge. Is the person just willing to listen before they apply the law, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
you want to
you
feel like
that
it hurt,
the case.
Kind of, yeah.
Wanted to ask you about this bail reform issue that was brought up by New York City Mayor Eric Adams when he went up to Albany and he spoke to the Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, and she said under no terms whatsoever are they going to be rolling back bail reform. And why are they so adamant from the Senate leadership?
Well,
you don't want to.
Her and Carl Hestian, both in the Bronx. I agree with both of them on these issues. I do agree with Mayor Adams that this is not a perfect law. You know, it was kind of put together when they did the budgets. You know, Nader Sage is very upset now because they're talking about, you know, changing zoning in a budget bill. You know what I'm saying? And they vote for the budget and this goes through. And this was done there too. They did push it through. I do support bail reform, but it wasn't the best process to create the law. You know, there wasn't as much debate. Mm-hmm. It was part of a budget process, and I need this money for my locality, and boom, it's voted on. So I do feel that there are issues that people bring out and make sensational headlines of that need to be addressed, where judges would have discretion in certain areas. But I also agree with Andrea Stewart-Cousins that, you know, 92% of the people out on, out on bail reform are not, you know, reoffending during that time, and they're showing up for court. You know, at first there was no one's going to show up for court, but that turned out not to be true. Now it's, these terrible things can happen when, a criminal is not presumed guilty and kept, locked up. But I believe the Constitution that bail should be just to be make sure that you're going to appear at court to have your day in court, unless you're some kind of menace to society. So we have had one incident in Yonkers that I know of the gentleman that was in a money dispute with two ladies that one of them worked at the school, and he had committed a property crime. He had set a car on fire, maybe for insurance. I'm not sure why he set the car on fire upstate. Uh-huh. And he wasn't held on, forced to make bail or come up with the cash to make bail. And then he later came and got into this dispute with these ladies and stabbed both of them in their home. So we have had the tragedy with us, but there's been an awful lot of people, too, that have went to court and were found not guilty, that went to court and were acquitted, went to court and made a plea deal of, just don't do anything more and we're going to drop this record in 2 years or something. So it's, to me, I believe Andrea's right that we don't want mass incarceration and people for minor crimes should not be, held, for money. You got to come up with some cash to get out. But I also believe with Mayor Adams that if the person's caught with a gun or, shooting at something, that some of these issues that have been brought up, that the judges should have some discretion on, is this person a danger to the community,
Well, one thing that Mayor Adams did say, he says, I'm a black man, which is obvious. He's a black man, and he's the mayor of the city of New York. But he says, but my story is being interpreted by people who don't look like me. So
well, I think
he's
got a problem.
And,
you get like the Curtis Sliwas, the New York Post, Castamedes, some of these people that are pushing for an end to bail reform and are pushing for certain things to be done in New York City. That way.
In what way? What way does it rub him the wrong way then? What's
I think
wrong
it's
with
just, if he doesn't accomplish this or doesn't get this done or that, they're just going to pillory him in the press type of thing.
Who?
Mayor
the press
Adams.
Will pillory
him? I think that was this. He had a little bit of a, I don't want to say temper tantrum, a rant, I guess you would call it. A diatribe that he got very frustrated.
Okay.
Probably was frustrated with Andrea Stewart-Cousins when he went there and was told, look, this thing's dead on arrival. We're not changing it. This is we have feelings about it. And then he goes out to the press.
But
what happened?
You know. But what are the feelings? Why can't we discuss the? Not you and I, but what is it that we're avoiding in the public arena that we can't discuss openly? So here's a black man who is the mayor of the city of New York, and he says, "I don't want other people who don't even look like me to interpret what the way I see it." And why don't we have that discussion?
Well, it's a tough discussion.
Why is a black woman who's at the top of the food chain and another person who's at the top of the food chain in the assembly, why are they averse?
Well, I think
who's wrong? Is it?
I don't think either of them's wrong. I agree with
Esty
and her
that
there's an awful lot of people of color who, you know, lost their housing, lost their jobs, and lost a lot of things over very minor crimes because they were kept in jail for 6, 7, 8 months, and oftentimes forced to take a plea even if they felt they were innocent just to get out of jail. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
I do agree with that, and I do agree. You know, I don't know. Let's say some single mother. Shoplifting, you know what I'm saying? I'll try to make it a noble cause for diapers for a baby or something, gets arrested. Maybe she loses her child. Maybe she loses her apartment, you know, maybe as she sits in jail for 6 months, you know, over some diapers, you know. I don't know. To me, there have been people kept in jail long times, and there was a lot of suicides. There was a girl, actually, part of this was caused by it was a girl here in Yonkers, or as a trans girl here in Yonkers, that committed suicide in Rikers Island, stuck in there over a minor charge, and there was another person. So there is we don't need to be locking people up.
Was that because she was
up.
Trans, or because she was transgender,
she was,
or
I believe
because
it was
she was a woman of color?
I think it was a prostitution charge. She didn't show up for court. And she was held in Rikers Island for a very long time and committed suicide. And then there was another, I think it was over a stolen
bag or something,
another kid that killed herself.
How does that relate to the color issue before we go all over the world and never get to the point? So
well, I think that
I don't
was the,
that's what I don't
those
understand.
Those type of stories were the prompting of the bail reform. And bail reform is good in a sense that it's, we save money. We're not keeping people locked up 7, 8, 9 months before they can get their issue adjudicated, and we don't have people coming out of this after 6, 7, 8 months with no housing, no job, no this, no that, and becoming a potential burden to society. So I am for bail reform.
Are you suggesting that because they're imprisoned at a particular time that they lose their whole lives because of it? Is there no
possible
remedy for it?
In other words, Hezzy, if you can't come up with the cash, you stay in jail. Previously, that's the way it was. You know, you could have a bail of $10,000 and you can't come up with $1,000. People living paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
And then you're in jail 3, 4 months, and the prosecutor, and you're saying, it's not me, it's not my fault, or whatever your excuse is.
Okay.
And he's saying, and they're saying, look, take this plea, and you can get out.
Okay.
And it'll be time served. And then you take the plea, and then you're out. But guess what? You lost your apartment. You lost your job. You got a record, you know.
Uh-huh.
Now you got to, well, I don't know in Westchester if you have to click the box anymore, but you have to tell people I've
okay,
had
but
a,
wait
an arrest.
A minute. You know, just can you stop for a moment? Because you go on, but you go on beyond the point. So the point is then, if you take the plea, is there no remedy to hold on to your job, or does the fact that you plead guilty to something that you may not have even really done, but you're pleading because it seems that you'll be able to go scot-free from it. So what is it that the Mayor Adams is trying to say? What is he really saying that's wrong about what Andrea Stewart Cousins and the assembly member are saying? Where
Mayor
is
Adams
this plan
saying along
in
the lines,
our society?
If, like, say, for an assault, right? We get in a fight. You and I are in an argument. We're pushing each other in a fight. and we go to jail and we can't make bail, we're stuck in there. That's what she's looking to solve. Mayor Adams is saying the judge has to be able to look at this fight. Was there a knife involved? Was there a gun involved? Were there some other circumstances that have a little bit of discretion, which I agree with, you know. Is there a history of this person being exceptionally violent, you know what I'm saying, that you can't, you know, I did something 2 years ago, and I did something 3 years ago, and now here I've hit you upside the head again.
So why can't we come to a meeting of the minds where we you know, just get to a balancing point?
Well, I think it's
one
a very politically charged issue.
Why is it politically charged? I don't get it. I don't see
because
it.
Because you have two sides.
I don't see why it's politically charged.
I'll tell you why, in my opinion. You have two sides that they want it all or nothing. They want it black or white. There's a lot of gray area in between. So you have the side that's like, you know what, roll back bail reform. Bail reform is the worst thing that ever happened to this country. And then you have Andrew Scheer Cousins' side, you know, I don't want mass incarceration. This is hurt black people, blah, 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 and other minorities and poor people. And instead of looking for that middle ground of saying, you know what, there's some good points on her side and there's some good points on the Mayor Adams' side
in
coming to an understanding. But unfortunately, in politics, it's usually either or nowadays. There's no sitting down and having a middle ground.
No balancing act. I guess the thing is, because we look at things from a color perspective, it just does seem that somehow or another – we always believed that there was only one perspective from black people, but there isn't one perspective from black people.
No, not at all.
So why isn't there a sit-down where we can come to some sort of a more balanced agreement? Why can't we find a gray area between one thing or the other?
Is
Andrea Stewart Cousin trying to push her power one way or the other? Or is it Adams that wants to get the upper hand somehow? What are we seeing happening?
He and Carl, and this is a lot of
hasty
guessing on me. They see this legislation as one of their great achievements. You know what I'm saying?
Really.
I believe so. And then coming from a police background, Mayor Adams, sees that, you know, he encounters a lot of people that he probably thought should have been locked up a long time ago, and has a more stern view of this. And there are some conservatives that are, demanding he do certain things really quick, which I think is rubbing him the wrong way when they portray him a certain way. And then you have a lot of very liberal people who don't want any changes to this bail reform thing. So it's just, it's very polarized. But to me, the smart thing to do would be to find a middle ground, you know.
I guess that's the thing that I never understand. Why don't we codify exactly what we want done, and where there could be a sense of leniency? Or none. Why can't we just say, like, well, it's murder, tough shit, you know, it's not going to happen. We're not going to let you walk out. You murdered somebody, or you hurt somebody in a very bad way.
You can walk out with cash. That was the issue. You could murder somebody, walk out with cash. You know what I'm saying? The bail is, can you show up for court? Now, if you're poor, you can't make the bail, and then you're stuck in the cell, whether you're guilty or not guilty. It should only be, in my opinion, the standard should be, are you a danger to society or will you not show up? You know, maybe if I'm a citizen of a Central American country or a African country or a European country, maybe you want to take my passport, or maybe I can't get if I left, it could cause a lot of harm to a lot of people.
Well, how about if we put like a metal thing on your leg, and we'll know if we are leaving the district. Maybe we'll say,
sometimes they'll do that.
You can go
if
anywhere
cash.
You want.
Yeah. With cash bail, they used to do that an awful lot, put the ankle bracelet on or something. But my view of it is, under the Constitution, bail is to ensure that you come to court, or if you can't be out in society till your court date. You know, there's some people that, you know, you saw some of these high-profile cases. There must have been a dozen of them in New York City over the last
right.
2 years. The gentleman that was, you know, arrested multiple times, he was mentally insane and attacked a guy in an ATM thing. Then finally, after he created an egregious enough crime, the prosecutors mm-hmm. pointed out his mental health issues and got him to, you know, got him into a mental health hospital. Unfortunately, he just, you know, was arrested, showed up for court, arrested, showed up for court. But part of it's the prosecutors have to do their job to make the case to the judges, and part of it, the Mayor Adams is right. If this person is dangerous, he shouldn't be going back on the street. Yeah. You know, if he's a menace to society or potentially hurts himself or society, then it might not be. You know, if you call up, if I call up, you and say, Pezzy, I want to kill myself tomorrow or today, and you say, oh, my God, and I hang up on you, you call the police, they're going to commit me for 3 days.
Who cares?
No, I'm saying.
If you want to kill yourself,
I'm saying,
then good
if you report that I wanted to kill myself, they would retain me. I'm not sure how long the time is, like 3 days, 12 days, or whatever it is, just to make sure I'm not going to do this. You know what I'm saying? Anybody that threatens mm-hmm. to kill themselves automatically gets like hospitalized. So anybody that's a potential danger to society might have to be kept in jail. Or should be kept in jail until they see the judge to have the judge look at this.
It seems to me that the argument here is we're trying to blame the whoever the person is that committed some sort of problem for society. The problem is that it's our judges and our lawyers who are not representing these people well. And even the prosecution is not able to say, hey, this person's got a mental issue.
Mm-hmm.
Or
that,
why
in
can't
a lot of
we
cases,
then
that's
send
true.
Them through to check that out first before we even give them bail? Maybe they shouldn't be allowed on the streets.
Yeah, there's some.
You know, these people have history.
Yes. Some of it is making that case to a judge. But the judges do have their hands tied a bit with this bail reform law.
Well, isn't
but
that the
I don't
job
think we should throw
of,
out the whole
the
law
of Hasty and,
solve
and
this issue.
Isn't that the job of our elected officials like Andrea Stewart Cousins and Hasty to get the job done in the state Senate? I don't get
it. I do believe
or in the assembly.
I do believe they it's very politically charged, and I can see why they want to avoid it, but I do believe they should be listening to the other people that on certain types of cases where there is a potential for someone being on the street that shouldn't be on the street that might cause mm-hmm. harm to themselves or someone else, that the judges should have some leeway, you know. But they're of the mind of, you know what, you're innocent until proven guilty kind of thing, which I believe
well,
also.
I don't know what kind
there,
of thing
there,
that
there,
is, but
there,
all I know
that,
is that evidently – they're not the only black people in the world, and we've got someone who's the mayor who just got elected the majority in the city, and evidently he's expressing something that needs to be heard, and we're not hearing him, and I don't understand why. And,
well, I,
and
think,
I really you know, just don't quite get it.
I think as far as, how would I say this, as far as public opinion goes, even in the minority community
uh-huh.
and in general, I believe
mm-hmm.
more people are inclined to believe to be with Mayor Adams or the conservatives of just roll this thing back. We don't want bail reform. You know what I'm saying? They, I
mm-hmm.
believe they're in, on the they've done a very poor job of saying what's good about bail reform. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But I believe they're on the losing end of this. Myself, where I support bail reform. Trust me, the most people in Yonkers would disagree with me, I believe. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But most people in Yonkers don't hear things like 92% of the people, you know, show up for court. You know what I'm saying? And don't commit a crime between then and
no,
their
they
court.
Don't.
But there
you
is.
Don't hear that.
But there is
that's the fault of our
they
police
do hear about the guy
it?
That set a car on fire upstate and then stabbed two ladies, you know, later on. And that was
but
made to
isn't
be
that
a
the fault
story.
Of our police department who don't tell us what's going on?
That's
why don't
part
we?
Of it.
Why isn't
yeah,
there a report from the courts about what's going on and who gets released and who doesn't get released?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think
why
it's
don't a, we have that?
I think it's more, well, you should have it, in my opinion. They do it in other
mm-hmm.
large cities
I
in
agree.
New York. But yeah. I think it's more the fault of Andrea Stewart Cousins, the progressives, the people who promoted this, that they don't put out information about bail reform. Bail reform is a good thing, but both sides want all or nothing. There's a middle ground. I think the mayor's expressed that.
I
he
think
actually
it's a middle ground.
Yeah, the mayor's actually in Yonkers has said, you know what, I support bail reform. There are good things about it, but I don't support, very dangerous people being released. I support also judges having some more discretion, you know what I'm saying, in on violence cases, that type of thing. I guess there's some progressives and minorities that feel that there's a bias with judges or something that they wouldn't get as fair a shake. But I don't agree with that. I believe that judges in certain cases where there could be harm to society should have some discretion to demand bail or deny bail even.
Well,
but,
should there be a time
should be limited.
If there's a sitting judge who evidently creates situations where the people that come before him or her get released, but then they come back with other cases, shouldn't there be a time where you say enough is enough? We gave you
well,
one
that's
chance.
Happened.
Fine.
I don't agree with this, but that's happened here in New York. There have been some judges that have ignored the bail reform law and held
mm-hmm.
the person over for bail, and they've been kind of lauded in the press, like the New York Post and Wall Street Journal, those
uh-huh.
kind of things. But I don't want judges making the law. You know, the judges are there to apply the law, you know what I'm saying?
Correct.
But they're not
apply.
There to make the law. But there have been some cases in New York where the judge just no. And once the judge says you're paying bail, you got to go see another judge about it, and then apparently they haven't taken it to a higher court. So there are some activist judges that just are just out of their own conscience, you know. Maybe let's say Judge Hezzy sitting there, and here comes Brian Herod, and I threaten to cut my neighbor's throat. And last year I stabbed a guy in the belly, and he's still handicapped. And the year before that, I hit somebody so hard.
To a shrink.
Yeah,
I'd send
and he would
you to
say,
get a shrink.
Yes.
Time to go.
So maybe Judge Hezzy would say, you know what? I don't care what bail reform is. This rogue guy Brian Herod is going to sit in jail till his trial. he's going to sit in jail till his trial. So I'm afraid to let him back on the street.
But you know, I understand that happens too often. But the real problem, Brian, is that they're reinterpreting the law. The law is what it is. So
yeah.
Why is it that we're so imbalanced with the law to begin with? Where some
well,
people
it,
agree,
it was
and
controversial
other people
when
don't.
It was approved, and it wasn't approved in the best way, in my opinion. It's like this issue. Nader
no,
just
wasn't.
Raised it, I think, this week. This issue with Albany's all of a sudden going to say that basements can be turned into apartments and single family homes in certain
right.
zones of cities,
mm-hmm.
and these other issues that Nader was bringing up. You know, that's going to be in a budget bill. You know what I'm saying? You have to vote against the
yeah.
budget to not have this happen. So that's the way this other thing came out. It wasn't done in the best way. Maybe it would have never got approved if they didn't do it in a budget bill. That was probably part of the
uh-huh.
political calculus there. Even this thing here, yes, I'm for affordable housing, but I just can't go to a nicer neighborhood in Yonkers and say, you know, your neighbors can all of a sudden make three-family homes here
mm-hmm.
Without any local approval, you know, that kind of thing. So,
yeah.
you know, you just, to me, that's just foolish. But that's the way things are done in
and
New York.
It doesn't
that's
work.
Part of the,
we don't have the space to park all the cars.
The budget is not just about who gets what money. A lot of times the budget's about social issues. I want affordable units, but you can't just go and tell people in, Rye Brook or Scarsdale that their neighbor can all of a sudden split their basement up into two apartments,
mm-hmm.
the next across the street. And it affects home values, and it affects it takes the decisions away from the local authorities. So that's what they did with
does.
This bail reform, unfortunately.
It seems it's a real problem.
Yeah.
It's a real problem because we evidently don't have discussions. We probably thrash this out better than anybody else. I wonder why they aren't doing that on the court system.
Well, it probably,
why
if
isn't
they
there,
hadn't
why
put in
there
the,
a challenge?
I would probably say, and I'm having to paraphrase for the senators and for the assemblyman, Hesse, probably wouldn't have passed. Bail reform probably wouldn't have passed unless they did put it in the budget. That was probably a tactic on their part.
That was a ploy. It was a tactic. That's right.
But that would be their argument, I assume, was we did it that way because we needed to get it done. We need to get it done fast. But unfortunately,
I wonder if Mayor Adams can actually bring some sort of argument forward that would reach the Senate and the Assembly, where he can challenge this. And if he feels so fervently about it, then maybe we need to reflect again about the whole issue. Because
I think
we're being ripped apart over it.
I think there will be modifications, especially in the next year when there's more people in the Assembly and Senate up for election. Obviously, the people who support bail reform have lost in the court of public opinion. Public opinion is they want to modify this bail reform or even get rid of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm for modifying it, over time, it's going to be modified, and it may very well be rolled back because the people who are pushing for a rollback have done an excellent job. In the court of public opinion, they've done an excellent job of promoting their idea, of reaching out to other media, of trying to find examples of where this went wrong, and being very sensational. And that works, you know what I'm saying? You're in the media business. You know that you don't always have to be right, but you have to be good at getting your message across, you know? So it helps to
unbelievable.
Be. And Andrea Stewart Cousins is not that effective at getting her messages across, in my opinion.
No, she's not been doing a good job that way. It's almost like hiding out. Well, anyway, I wish we could go on to the next topic on international politics. Maybe we could save that till next week because that's
all
not
right.
going away.
Yeah.
So that's another issue with Jamal Bowman and all kinds of other issues. A corollary to him as well, and re-election and redistricting, and my God, it just doesn't stop. When
I'll add it next
year,
next week's
break?
Notes there, Hezzy. Okay. It is
well,
a good one. That'll be a topic and a half, actually.
Hey, but before you go, how do people reach the Yonkers Newswire? How do they find you?
I'm mostly on social media platforms, so they just Google the Yonkers Newswire. They can reach me there, and there's a few websites.
And they can find you that way.
Yes. Yours, I don't know if I get as much, my websites don't get as much traffic as yours, but they can be Googled, and they'll come up the websites or the social media
numbers
pages.
Numbers don't matter, it's the efficacy of what you're writing.
Numbers matter, Hezzy. Let me tell you something. If you do a Google News search for Yonkers and see how many stories come up from the Yonkers Tribune. You know what I'm saying? you're in the top 10 every day of at least one, two, or sometimes three items. You know what I'm saying? So
you know what's
traffic
really
and numbers matter. Trust me.
You know what I found interesting, and I'm actually been floored about it. I've been at this now for 22 years, going on 23.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found interesting is it's only in the last year. that we get recognized by Google every day. It's
yeah.
like 2, 3, 4 articles a day, and they mm-hmm. send it out. What I never knew is that not only do they send me notice that that's happening, but they also send people that we write about the notices. So
oh, yeah. It's
amazing.
Let's say I'm Congressman so-and-so or Mayor so-and-so or
yeah.
Councilman so-and-so. I might have a Google alert, you know, like if anything's published
right.
about me, let me know. And every day they're seeing, Hezzy said this, Hezzy said that, Hezzy said this. So that's why you're so popular in Yonkers. But the
I have no idea. I thought it was something else.
You know, that I think one of your biggest advantages is you have
right.
an archive of news. I don't know how many years you've been doing this. But it must be, how many years you said? 20 years or something like this?
22, going on 23 years.
You don't take nothing down and you leave it up. And
no,
there's a lot of places that they redo their website, redo this, redo that, and they lose half of their stuff, you know what I'm saying? But if I want to know what happened in Yonkers in 2004 in December, I can find it. You know what I'm saying? It's searchable
yeah.
when I search somebody's name. You have it's very valuable. You're kind of like the website of record in Yonkers. Let me put it that way.
Well, that'll be nice. Well, you know, thank God you got started at a much younger age than I. So I think you'll outlive us all. And,
I hope so. I'll let you go, my friend, okay?
Well, thanks so much. I appreciate your time. All the best.
All right, bye-bye now.
Look forward to next week. We can talk about Bowman. Be well. Bye. Well, there we have it, folks. None other than Brian Harrod. He's the publisher and editor of Yonkers Newswire. And as you said, you could just look it up on your search engine, whichever one you use, and just look up Yonkers Newswire. And you'll find the link to the website, which is really terrific. Okay, so let's move on. And let's quickly look at what else is happening on the international stage. Bear with me a moment. One thing we've learned is that President Biden has said that every indication is that Russia is prepared to attack Ukraine. So the U.S. President Joe Biden warned today Russia could still invade Ukraine within days, and Russia expelled the number two diplomat at the United States Embassy in Moscow as tensions flared anew in the worst east-west standoff in decades. The NATO allies accused Russia of misleading the world by saying it was returning some troops to their bases, but instead moved in thousands of new ones. The pullout pledge was among Russian gestures this week that briefly cooled temperatures. Russia is believed to have some 150,000 military forces around Ukraine's borders, raising fears of a new war in Europe. Tensions also spiked on Thursday along the line that separates Ukrainian forces from Russia-backed separatists in the country's east, with both sides accusing each other of intensive shelling in a long simmering conflict that has killed 14,000 people. In a surprise blow to diplomacy, Russia ordered the deputy chief of mission at the United States Embassy in Moscow, his name is Bart Gorman, to leave the country. The State Department had said it called the new unprovoked and an unescalatory step. Russia did not say why he was expelled. Doubts escalated in the West over what exactly Russia is doing with its troops around Ukraine, including an estimated 60% of the overall Russian ground forces and about President Vladimir Putin's overall intentions. Well, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken went before the United Nations Security Council and described in detail the range of false flag attacks that Washington believes Moscow might stage to justify invasion. He described any invasion unfolding with barrages of missiles and bombs, cyber attacks, followed by Russian troops advancing on, quote, key targets that have already been identified and mapped out, end quote, although he did not elaborate on evidence of that. Well, Russia's intended targets included Kiev, with its nearly 3 million people, Blinken had said. Quote, specific groups of people, end quote, were also planned targets of any Russian invasion, he said. Quote, we are laying it out in great detail with the hope that by sharing what we know with the world, we can influence Russia to advance the path of war and choose a different path while there's still time. Biden's comments on the Russian threat were some of his starkest to date, suggesting the administration's perilous assessment of the situation. Speaking at the White House, he said that Washington saw no signs of a Russian withdrawal and said the threat of invasion remains, quote, very high, end quote, because Russia has moved more troops towards the border with Ukraine instead of pulling them out. Quote, every indication we have is they're prepared to go into Ukraine, attack Ukraine, end quote. He told reporters, he said the United States has, quote, reason to believe, end quote, that Russia is, quote, engaged in a false flag operation to have an excuse to go in, end quote, but did not provide details. Biden also said he had no plans, quote, end quote, to speak soon with Putin. Russia held out an offer of diplomacy, handing the U.S. a response Thursday to offers to engage in talks on limiting missile deployments in Europe, restrictions on military drills, and other confidence-building measures. The response, released by the foreign ministry, deplored the West's refusal to meet the main Russian security and demands and reaffirmed that Moscow could take unspecified military technical measures, quote, unquote, if the United States and its allies continue to stonewall its concerns. At the same time, it said that Russia was ready to discuss limits on missile deployments, restrictions on patrol flights by strategic bombers, and other confidence-building steps. Well, Russia denies it is plotting an invasion, but says it's free to deploy troops wherever necessary to counter NATO threats. It wants the West to keep Ukraine and other former Soviet nations out of NATO, hold weapons deployment near Russian borders, and roll back forces from Eastern Europe, demands the Allies have flatly rejected. Meanwhile, Western powers scramble to avert or prepare for eventual invasion. NATO's defense ministers in Brussels discussed ways to bolster defenses in Eastern Europe, while European Union leaders huddled over how to punish Russia if it invades. The United Nations Security Council met over Ukraine ahead of the Munich Security Conference in Germany, where Ukraine is high on the agenda. Quote, we cannot afford to fail, end quote, UN Undersecretary General Rosemary DiCarlo said. Quote, the current situation is extremely dangerous, end quote. Key Russian geopolitical ally accused Washington of, quote, playing up and sensationalizing the crisis and escalating tensions, end quote. Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin said the U.S. should, quote, take seriously and address Russia's legitimate and reasonable concerns on security assurance, end quote. At NATO headquarters in Brussels, United States Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin questioned the Russian troop promises, quote, we've seen some of those troops inch closer to that border. We see them fly in more combat and support aircraft, he said. We see them sharpen their readiness in the Black Sea. We even see them stocking up their blood supplies. We don't do those sort of things for no reason, and you certainly don't do them if you're getting ready to pack up and go home, end quote. British Defense Secretary Ben Wallace said that the West has seen, quote, an increase of troops over the last 48 hours, up 7,000. That squared with what a U.S. administration official said a day earlier. The top European Union officials said similar. Maxar Technologies, a commercial satellite imagery company that has been monitoring the Russian buildup, reported continued heightened military activity near Ukraine. It noted a new pontoon bridge and a new field hospital in Belarus. British Armed Forces Minister James Heapy called Russia's claim to be withdrawing troops, quote, disinformation, end quote. Russia leveled that charge against the West. And noting the Russian video of troop movements, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said, quote, the fact that they're putting a battle tank on a train and moving it in some direction doesn't prove withdrawal of troops. Russian Defense Ministry spokesman Major General Konashenkov offered a bit more detail on Thursday, saying that Russian tank and infantry units that engaged in drills in the Kursk and Bryansk regions neighboring Ukraine were returning to their permanent bases in the Nizhny Novgorod region. He said that some already were at their bases after a 700-kilometer journey. Troops deployed for exercises in Crimea, which Russia annexed from Ukraine in 2014, have moved back to Chechnya and Dagestan in Russia's North Caucasus, he said. He added that Russian troops involved in drills in Belarus also will move back to their garrisons after war games were there wrap up on Sunday. Konashenkov didn't mention how many troops were deployed and didn't say how many returned. Well, NATO, meanwhile, has moved troops and military equipment into Eastern Europe in a display of resolve meant to deter any Russian aggression and underline its intent to defend NATO's Eastern members in an unlikely event they too become a target. Well, the U.S. has started deploying 5,000 troops to Poland and Romania. Another 8,500 are on standby, and some U.S. troops are expected to move toward Bulgaria. Britain is sending hundreds of soldiers to Poland, offering more warships and planes, and doubling its personnel in Estonia. Germany, the Netherlands, and Norway are sending additional troops to Lithuania. Denmark and Spain are providing jets for air policing in the Baltic Sea region, and Spain deployed to Bulgaria. Even if an attack doesn't materialize, the sustained Russian pressure on Ukraine has further hobbled its shaky economy and left an entire nation under constant strain. Eastern Ukraine already has seen the side of fighting since 2014, and tensions soared again on Thursday. Authorities in the Luhansk region reported an increase in Ukrainian shelling along the 10th line of contact. Separatist official Rodion Miroshnik and said that rebel forces returned fire. Ukraine disputed the claim, saying that separatists had shelled its forces, but they didn't fire back. The Ukrainian military command charged that shells hit a kindergarten in Stanitsia in Luhanska, wounding two teachers and cut power supply to half of the town. An observer mission of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe is expected to offer its assessment of the situation later on Thursday. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky tweeted that the kindergarten shelling, quote, by the pro-Russian forces is a big provocation, end quote, adding that the OSCE monitoring activities are, quote, an additional deterrent, end quote. Asked about the flare-up, Stoltenberg said that NATO was concerned, quote, that Russia is trying to stage a pretext for an armed attack against Ukraine, end quote. Russia, in turn, aired worries that hawkish forces in Ukraine, encouraged by the West, could launch an attack to reclaim control of the rebel areas, plans Kiev denies. A 2015 deal brokered by France and Germany helped end the worst of the fighting in eastern Ukraine, but regular skirmishes have continued and a political settlement has stalled. Blinken and U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris were among political, military, and diplomatic leaders heading to the annual security conference in Munich that will see urgent consultations on the crisis. And this was reported by Isakshenkov from Moscow, Supervill from Washington, and Cook from Brussels, Matthew Lee in Munich, Angela Charlton in Paris, Jill Lawless in London, Edith M. Lederer at the United Nations, Frank Jordans in Berlin, Amar Amadani, Ellen Kickmeyer, Colleen Long, and Zeke Miller in Washington contributed all. And that's been, you know, that's been one of the real issues. So unbelievable. Now let's just look at some other issues. And this is interesting as far as the United States is concerned. the weekly jobless claims are up, but remain historically low. The Washington applications, from Washington, we hear that applications for U.S. unemployment benefits rose last week, but remain near historically low levels, reflecting relatively few layoffs across the economy. Jobless claims rose by 23,000 to 248,000 for the week ending February 12th. The Labor Department reported on Thursday claims were revised upwards to 225,000 the previous week. Yet the four-week average for claims, which compensates for weekly volatility, fell by 10,500 to 243,250. It was the second straight week of declines after rising to five straight weeks as the Omicron variant of the coronavirus disrupting business in many parts of the United States. In total, fewer than 1.6 million Americans were collecting jobless aid the week that ended February 5, a decrease of about 26,000 from the previous week. First-time applications for jobless aid generally track the pace of layoffs, which are back down to fairly healthy pre-pandemic levels. Earlier this month, the Labor Department reported a surprising burst of hiring in January, with employers adding 467,000 jobs. It also revised upwards its estimate for job gains in November and December by a combined 709,000. The unemployment rate edged up to a still low 4% from 3.9% as more people began looking for work, but not all of them securing jobs right away. Even as Omicron variant spread quickly earlier this winter, employers have been eager to hire. That winter spike in infections briefly tripped up the country's strong recovery from 2020's virus-caused recession, but employers appear confident in long-term growth. A massive government spending and the vaccine rollout jump-started the economy as employers added a record 6.4 million jobs last year. The U.S. economy expanded 5.7% in 2021, growing last year at the fastest annual pace since a 7.2% surge in 1984, also coming after a recession. An overheated U.S. economy has spawned inflation not seen in four decades, leading the Federal Reserve to ease its monetary support for the economy. Now, the Fed has signaled that it would begin a series of interest rate hikes in March, reversing pandemic-era policies that have fueled hiring and growth, but also stubborn inflation. So that's the story. Well, in Canada, we find out that protests continue. And Canada has endured bitter divisions in the past, but the current wave of disruptive protests over COVID-19 restrictions is unprecedented in the extent it has undermined public trust in government leadership, starting at the top with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. On Monday, as criticism of his hands-off approach mounted, Trudeau finally took forceful action against the truckers and other protesters who have laid siege to parts of Ottawa, the capital, for more than 2 weeks. The Prime Minister invoked emergency powers that could freeze protesters' bank accounts, target overcrowding, overcrowding sites used to support them, and ban blockades at border crossings, airports, and in Ottawa. Unsurprisingly, the pronouncements further angered the protesters and many of their conservative backers. A wave of social media posts denounced Trudeau as a tyrant, but there was also little enthusiasm for the move anywhere else on Canada's political spectrum. While the pronouncement may halt a sharp recent drop in Trudeau's approval ratings, he may not recover his former popularity, said Nelson Wiseman, a political science professor at the University of Toronto. Now, this is very interesting with regard Omicron, an estimated 73% of the U.S. now is immune to Omicron. The question is if that's enough. We're not sure. And so these become major, major concerns. Okay, so let's just see what else we have. All right, one moment. let me just quickly check something else. I think that we're cool. All right, I think that's where we are today. Oh, it's almost like about 5 minutes to the end of the hour. So I think we've concluded our time with you today. Got to go to a demonstration today in Yonkers at 1 Larkin Plaza at 4 o'clock. So I've got to get there. And so that's the story with us today. Let me just quickly look to see what's happening for tomorrow, as I don't remember what we have scheduled. One moment here. Oh, yeah, tomorrow from 10 to 11, I'll be opening the broadcast, and then at 11 o'clock, we're going to be speaking to Assemblymember Nader Sayers. So very compelling day. Should be a lot of fun. And we'll go back and see what's happening with Ukraine and other issues as well. So there will be a lot to discuss, that's for sure. So there we are, folks. Thank you again for being with us today. And we hope that you'll consider joining us tomorrow. Be well. And thank you for joining us. Goodbye.